The sky was gray with the approach of dawn when the kid woke up. He opened his eyes first, without moving otherwise. His head was turned so that he could see Annabelle sitting on the rock. He watched her for a moment, without giving away the fact that he was awake. Her head was up, and it turned frequently from side to side as she looked around, evidently alert for any sign of danger. That was good to see. If he was going to travel with them, he had to know whether or not he could depend on her. From the looks of it, she could stand a turn on watch. They'd have to wait and see about everything else. Oh, and she could get her gun out fairly quickly and defend herself in a fight, he reminded himself. But that had been an instinctive reaction, and the Apache had been only a few feet away when she shot him. He would find out how fast and accurate she really was once they'd had a chance to practice a little. He wouldn't truly know how she would react in a fight until the time came, which he was sure it would, if they were heading into the Jornado del Muerto. The kid sat up, which drew Annabelle's attention to him as she saw the movement in the dim light. He pushed his blankets aside and climbed to his feet and walked over to her.
Everything quiet?
Yes, I haven't seen or heard anything except some sort of night bird a little while ago.
The kid frowned. What Annabelle had heard might have been a night bird, or it might have been something else.
Give me the rifle, then go get under the wagon with Father Jardine.
What's wrong?
I don't know. Just give me the damned rifle.
You're a rude man, Mr. Morgan.
She handed over the Winchester and stood up.
Under the wagon. Where'd you hear that bird?
She gestured vaguely toward the hills.
Up there somewhere.
If you hear any shooting, stay where you are and keep the Padre under there with you. Don't come out until I tell you to.
He set off up the hill, moving swiftly in a crouching run and veering from side to side. The light at this time of day wasn't good for shooting, just like twilight, but if anybody was up there waiting to bushwhack them, chances were the bastard's eyes would be adjusted to the dimness by now. The kid used every rock, every bush, every scrubby little tree he could find for cover. He climbed all the way to the slab of rock where he had watched over the camp the night before, without running into any trouble along the way. He paused there to listen. Sure enough, he saw a group of riders off in the distance. The tension that filled the kid eased a little, but only a little. His gut told him that someone had been spying on them, and more than one someone at that. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been any need for signals passing between them. The two members of the Apache war party who had survived the fight? Maybe. Indians often signaled with animal noises like that. It might have been some of Fortunato's men, too, although the kid considered that less likely. And it could even have been someone else. Some enemies Annabelle and Father Jardine hadn't encountered so far. The kid wondered just how many people actually knew about this golden candlestick they were after. Something like that might be valuable enough to tempt any number of thieves and owl hoots. But right now, the kid didn't see or hear anything out of the ordinary, so he suspected that whoever was watching them was gone. He didn't know what the purpose had been in spying on them. He was sure he would find out sooner or later. The kid walked back to the campsite.
What was it?
Nothing. I reckon it was just a bird, like you said.
He handed the rifle back to her.
Keep your eyes open. I'll get started on a fire so we can cook some breakfast. We'll put some miles behind us today.
Count Eduardo Fortunato sat up on his cot and rubbed the sleep out of his eyes.
What is it, Arturo?
He looked up at his dour-faced servant, who stood there in a nightshirt holding a lantern.
The savages are back, Your Excellency.
They found the woman and the priest?
I assumed you would want to make them your report, sir, so I have no idea what they found.
Fortunato swung his legs off the cot. Arturo was an insolent bastard. Fortunato's ancestors would have had a servant like that flogged. In this day and age, of course, one could not do that, which was a shame, in Fortunato's opinion. Although he was quite fond of all the modern comforts and conveniences, in some ways it must have been better in the old days.
Don't just stand there. Help me dress.
Arturo set the lantern aside on a folding table. Its yellow glow filled the large tent. The Count had brought along as much as he could pack in a wagon. Well, as much as Arturo could pack anyway, since Count Fortunato himself did no physical labor except the occasional killing. So the tent was well furnished with a roomy, comfortable cot, a dining table, a writing table, and a folding chair with attached cushions. There was also a large trunk that contained the Count's clothes, as well as several smaller cases that held his guns, a saber, and a pair of dueling swords. A few minutes later, Fortunato pushed aside the canvas flap over the tent's entrance and stepped out. Arturo followed him, carrying the lantern again. The Count was a stocky, middle-aged man, with thick, sleek hair that was still black as midnight, and a ruggedly handsome face with deep-set dark eyes that could burn with passion or glitter with icy hatred, depending on the circumstances. Two men stood in front of the tent, half-breed Yaquis in boots, leggings, and long tunics belted around their waists with colorful red sashes. Blue headbands held back their long raven-black hair. They were half-brothers as well as half-breeds, Fortunato knew. They shared the same father, a Mexican bandito who'd had a habit of raping and enslaving Yaqui women he had captured. The brothers had been raised among their father's band of cutthroats. Their mothers had been discarded somewhere along the way. Neither of them really remembered much about that. Fortunato knew these things because the man who had helped him find and hire the brothers had insisted on telling him all about their dreary history. Fortunato didn't care, but it was easier to listen to the man rather than risk offending him. That individual was a high-ranking officer in the Rurales with connections to numerous bandit gangs in the northern part of Mexico. In theory, of course, the Rurales were supposed to hunt down and capture or kill such criminals, but it was so much easier and so much more profitable to cooperate with them whenever possible. For a man with the sort of money that Fortunato was willing to spend, the Rurales would do almost anything, including telling him where he could find a pair of trackers like the Yaquis who stood before him.
Did you find the woman and the priest?
They are camped where you believe it to be, where the fire was.
What about those shots we heard earlier?
The distant reports had been very faint, which told Fortunato they came either from far out on the flats or even from the hills on the other side.
We know nothing of them. The camp was quiet when we got there. We climbed into the hills above it and watched for a time. The fire was out then, and the people slept, except for a guard.
A guard? Who was it?
The woman.
What about the priest?
We did not see him. The other man, he slept in the wagon.
The other man. Now they were getting to what Fortunato really wanted to know. He was intrigued by the stranger who had interfered that afternoon and prevented his men from capturing Dr. Dare and the priest.
Describe the man you saw.
It was dark. We could not see much. He seemed to be young. He had a big hat and wore a buckskin shirt.
Fortunato nodded and turned. He went over to the wagon.
Braddock! Come out of there!
The gunman crawled slowly out from under the wagon.
Yeah? Yes, sir. What can I do for you, Count?
Braddock's midsection was heavily bandaged. Arturo had tended to his wound and pronounced that he would live, probably.
The man who shot you and killed Davenport in Crimmins. You said he was young and wore a buckskin shirt?
Yeah, from what I could see. You gotta remember, Count, it all happened pretty fast, and he wasn't that close to us.
Close enough to shoot you when you and Davenport missed him?
Sorry.
Never mind. It appears that this man has now joined forces with Dr. Dare and the old man. Your orders remain the same. As soon as it's light enough to see, you will start back to El Paso and find more gunmen to send out here to me.
I'm hurt, boss. I got a bullet in my gut.
Nonsense. Arturo said the wound was merely a deep graze. The bullet did not remain lodged in it.
Well, it feels like it's still there. I ain't sure I can ride that far.
I suppose we could allow you to remain here for a few days to recuperate.
Well, that'd be mighty good, Count. I'll be right as rain in no time, you'll see. I just need to rest up a mite.
Of course, the rest of us will have to push on and take the wagon with us, as well as all the supplies and the water.
But you can't do that. You can't leave me out here with nothing.
Those things belong to me, Braddock. I plan to take them with me when I set out after my quarry.
All right. I'll head for El Paso first thing in the morning.
Dawn is less than an hour away. You might as well start getting ready to depart now.
Yeah, I reckon so.
You won't have any trouble finding more men?
If there's one thing that ain't in short supply along the border, it's men who are good with their guns and willing to use them if the price is right. How many fellas you want me to send to you?
Well, three wasn't enough, obviously. Suppose we double it to six.
Yes, sir. Six it is. And what about me?
You can consider your employment concluded once you've performed this task for me. You'll be free to remain in El Paso or move on or whatever else strikes your fancy.
Find me a whorehouse and lay up for a few weeks while this bullet hole in my side heals up. That's what I'll do.
Fortunato took a coin from his pocket and held it out. It was a $50 gold piece.
Perhaps this will help.
Braddock took the coin and rubbed it between his fingers. In the gray light of pre-dawn, a sly, greedy smile appeared on his lips.
And in case you're thinking of taking my money and failing to perform the task I've given you, remember our two yucky friends. If the men you're supposed to send to me do not show up within, let us say, 4 days, then you can be sure that some dark night, those two will pay you a visit. And they will be the last visitors you ever have, Braddock.
You can't hold me to that. I ain't responsible for what other hombres do.
Then I suggest you choose wisely. Pick men who can be trusted to do what they say they will do. Because I assure you, I always do what I say I will do.
Yeah, I get it. Is that all, Count?
Fortunato nodded and made a gesture of dismissal.
Thanks. Hey, Arturo, how's about getting some coffee on the boil?
Fortunato strolled back to his tent. Fortunato was tired. He never slept well under primitive conditions, but his brain was full of activity. He thought about the Königsberg candlestick and how valuable it was supposed to be. In truth, however, its monetary value meant little or nothing to Fortunato. He had inherited more wealth than he could ever spend. He wanted the artifact because it was reputed to be very beautiful, and after being lost for 200 years, it was a real rarity as well. Nothing pleased Fortunato more than possessing something the likes of which no other man on earth possessed, whether it was a painting, a piece of sculpture, or a beautiful woman. As long as he was the only one who had it, that was what really mattered to him. He wondered briefly if Dr. Annabelle Dare was a virgin. Then there was the secret of the 12 pearls. To this day, no one knew exactly what it was, but Albrecht Königsberg had taken it with him when he fled Spain for the New World. This was known because Königsberg himself had boasted of it and traded on its supposed worth to get what he wanted. Of course, the German could have been lying, but with the instincts of a born hunter, Fortunato did not believe that to be the case. Now, after years of searching, he was on the trail of both the Königsberg candlestick and the secret of the 12 pearls. Rather, he was on the trail of Dr. Dare and the priest, and from the information Fortunato had bought in Mexico City, he was convinced they knew where to look. He could not allow the church to beat him to the treasure. He would never get his hands on it if that happened. Because of that, he planned to make Dr. Dare and Father Jardine his prisoners, so he could force them to lead him to what he sought. In a moment of rage over having what he wanted almost in the palm of his hand, only to have it snatched away, he had taken one of his rifles from its case that afternoon and loosed a shot at the man who had interfered. That shot had missed its target and wounded Dr. Dare instead, and in that moment, as he watched through the telescopic sight, Fortunato realized that he had almost made a terrible mistake. He wanted the woman and the priest to live, for now. But as for the stranger who had dared to interfere in his plans, that man would die, and Fortunato would take great pleasure in his death. The hills ran north and south, so the kid kept them on his left as he led the wagon northward that day. By mid-morning, he spotted a blue-gray line on the horizon ahead of them that marked the location of more hills angling from the southeast to the northwest. He wasn't sure, but he thought that beyond those hills, they would come to the valley of the Rio Grande. They would have to cross the river somewhere, because they were west of it, and the Jornado del Muerto lay to the east. He dropped back alongside the wagon. Annabelle had had a spare hat among their supplies, and she wore it to protect her head from the scorching sun. She wore a fresh shirt as well, since the one she'd had on the day before had been ruined by the bloodstain and the fact that the kid had ripped the left sleeve off to treat her wound. He had changed the dressing on the injury that morning before they broke camp and was pleased with the way it looked. There didn't seem to be any infection around it.
Why didn't you just take the train from El Paso to Las Cruces? It's not far from there to Jornada.
We didn't come through El Paso. We bought this wagon and outfit in Chihuahua and then swung around El Paso because we were afraid Fortunato might have spies there waiting for us. We were trying to give him the slip in case he was already on our trail. Clearly, we were unsuccessful. We spotted him following us a couple of days ago and hoped that we could stay ahead of him until we found the treasure, but that doesn't look like it's going to be the case.
You don't know that. In hot, dry country like this, if he has a wagon, he can't move much faster than you can. There's only so much a team of horses or mules can do under these conditions. If he pushes his animals too hard, he'll find himself stuck.
I'm sure he has a wagon. I can imagine Count Eduardo Fortunato traveling without his creature comfort, even in a godforsaken wasteland like this one.
No land can be godforsaken, my child. Only those unfortunates who choose to forsake him.
Maybe so, but it's still a wasteland out here. Why would anyone choose to live in such a place?
You may have noticed, it's not real crowded. But don't sell it short. Every place has its charms, I guess. Even the desert can be beautiful under the right conditions.
You'd know better than I would, if this is your home.
The kid didn't really have one of those anymore. Not since Revel died. But he didn't bother explaining that to Annabelle. It was none of her business, and he didn't know if she would understand anyway. Most of the time, he wasn't sure that he understood. By the middle of the day, the kid had found a good resting spot, so he had everyone stop and rest. He showed Annabelle how to make a tiny fire from dried mesquite branches that gave off almost no smoke. Then he boiled coffee and fried some bacon, since they had plenty of supplies and could replenish them in Las Cruces tomorrow or the next day.
Who taught you how to build a fire like that, Mr. Morgan? I'm just curious. You don't have to answer if you don't want to.
I don't mind. My father taught me.
When you were a boy?
When I was younger than I am now.
Is your father the one who taught you all these things you know about getting along in the wilderness?
Pretty much.
I suppose it's good that a father can pass along such things to his children.
What about your pa? He ever teach you anything?
My father was too busy being a professor of antiquities and ancient languages. He didn't have time for his children, especially his daughters. They couldn't follow in his footsteps, you see.
But you did anyway.
Yes.
Didn't make him change his mind about you, though, did it?
I wouldn't know. He passed away a month before I received my doctorate.
Oh. Sorry.
It was a long time ago.
Couldn't have been that long, he thought, since she was only about 25 or 26. But despite the momentary lapse he'd just made, he tried not to pry in other people's lives, just as he didn't want them prying into his. He could be thankful, though, that Frank had always had faith in him, even when he didn't deserve it. And probably the last thing in the world that Frank had wanted was for his son to follow in his footsteps. That was what had happened, though. The world was a funny old place.
Why don't we see just what you can do with that gun, Doctor?
What do you mean?
The kid stood up and pointed.
See that little rock over there sitting on that bigger rock? See how many shots it takes you to hit it.
What rock? That little bitty one? It must be 50 feet away. Handguns aren't that accurate.
The Colt flickered into the kid's hand.
Just a matter of knowing your weapon.
For a moment, Annabelle stared at the spot where the small rock had been, then turned her head and glared at the kid.
You're just showing off.
Showing you what can be done. There's a difference.
I'm not sure you should be doing this, Doctor. This isn't just target practice. Mr. Morgan wants to teach you how to be a more efficient killer.
No offense, Padre, but getting your hands on that artifact you're after might depend on how good Dr. Dare is with her gun. Both of your lives might depend on it as well.
Don't worry, Father. If it's Mr. Morgan's goal to turn me into a gunfighter, he's going to be disappointed. When this is over and we have the Königsberg candlestick and the secret of the 12 pearls, I'm going straight back to Yale.
Oh, very well, oh, very well. I suppose that if you're going to carry a gun, it's best to be proficient in its use.
Annabelle pointed to the spot where the smaller rock had been balanced on the bigger one.
What am I supposed to shoot at now? You ruined the target.
Hang on, I'll find something else.
The kid walked over to the rocks and found another one about the size of his fist. He placed it on top of the bigger rock.
There. Shoot at that. Just let me get out of the way first.
She waited until he came back to her side, then drew the Smith & Wesson 38 and held it out in front of her as far as she could reach. Her arm was as stiff and straight as a board.
See, there's your first mistake. You're too stiff. Loosen up a little. Bend your elbow. Not much. Just slightly.
Like this?
No, that's too much.
The kid took hold of her arm to position it and to show her what he meant.
There, like that.
He realized after a second that he still had hold of her arm and could feel the warmth of her flesh through the shirt sleeve. He let go and stepped back. Annabelle peered over the barrel of the gun with her right eye and screwed her left eye shut as tightly as it would go.
No, that's going to throw your aim off. Keep both eyes open.
Are you going to let me shoot or not? This was your idea, you know.
He stepped back and spread his hands, then crossed his arms over his chest.
Go ahead.
Fine.
Annabelle turned her attention back to the target, and a second later, she pulled the trigger. The rock didn't budge. There was no sign that the bullet hit anything else, either. Annabelle lowered the gun.
Where did it go? I didn't see it hit anything.
The kid waved a hand toward the flat.
It landed a few hundred yards out yonder. You were way too high. That's because you jerked the trigger too hard, and you were aiming too high to start with. Want to try again?
Yes, I most certainly do.
Annabelle aimed and fired again. This time, the slug plowed into the ground about halfway between where she stood and the rock she was aiming at.
Oh!
You corrected too much. Try this. Don't aim.
Don't aim? How can I hit anything if I don't aim at it?
You're not hitting it when you do aim at it. Point the gun. Just point it like the barrel was your index finger and then squeeze the trigger. Don't jerk it.
I don't think it'll work, but all right.
Annabelle did like he told her, taking a casual stance as she pointed the gun and fired. The bullet hit the big rock about a foot and a half below the target.
Oh my goodness, I almost hit it.
Almost will usually get you killed out here. Try again.
You could tell me that I did a good job, you know. It wouldn't hurt you.
When you were back there at Yale, did your teachers tell you you did a good job every time you answered one question on an examination?
The kid pointed at the rock. His meaning was clear. The target was still there. Annabelle shook her head and pointed the Smith & Wesson at the rocks again.
Turn your body. Again, not much. All these adjustments need to be slight because the gun will magnify them.
Fine.
She shifted her stance.
Take a deep breath and hold it. Not long, just for a second while you pull the trigger.
All right.
She pointed the gun, took a breath, held it, squeezed the trigger.
I hit it! I hit it! Did you see that?
Yep. Get to where you can do that 99 times out of 100 and you might survive your next gunfight. Assuming, of course, that there is a next one.
With Fortunato after us, I'd wager that there will be.
You'd bet a hat.
What?
That's what folks out here sometimes say when they're sure of something. I'll bet a hat.
Well, I'm not betting this hat. It's the only one I have left, and I don't like the sun on my head.
You want me to find you another rock to shoot at?
Yes, please.
The kid glanced over at Father Jardine, who was sitting on the lowered tailgate of the wagon. The priest still wore a look of disapproval on his lined and weathered face. The kid could tell that he was just aching to quote some scripture, probably, "Thou shalt not kill." The kid remembered some words from the good book, too, about the Lord helping those who help themselves. Out there on the frontier, helping yourself usually involved gun smoke.
There you go.
A moment later, he balanced a slightly smaller rock on top of the bigger one.
Take a shot at this.
They arrived at Las Cruces late the next day, crossing a long wooden bridge over the Rio Grande just west of the settlement. Annabelle was still a little leery of going into a town. Annabelle drove the wagon toward the cluster of frame and adobe buildings.
Fortunato could have spies there, waiting for us.
He's already dogging your trail. It's not like he doesn't know where you're going.
But how could he know? That's what's puzzled me all along.
How many people in Mexico City knew where you were headed?
Not many. A few church and government officials. We had to have their help while we were trying to track down Königsberg.
Well, there's your answer. An hombre who has as much money as this fella Fortunato and doesn't mind spending it to get what he wants can find out almost anything. He probably just started bribing folks in Mexico City until somebody told him where you and the Padre had gone.
You seem to think money is the answer to everything, Mr. Morgan.
No, not everything. It won't stop a bullet or bring back somebody you've lost.
Annabelle frowned at him and looked puzzled, as if she wanted to ask him what he meant by that. He healed the buckskin to a faster pace and rode ahead. The last thing he wanted was to have to answer a bunch of nosy questions from some doggone curious female. Las Cruces was a good-sized settlement. The railroad tracks ran along the western edge of town, so the kid came to them first. He crossed the tracks and looked toward the depot, a large adobe building with a red tile roof a couple of blocks to his right. The street that dead-ended at the train station appeared to form a dividing line of sorts, with the respectable businesses and residences, along with the churches and the school, to the north of it, and the saloons, cantinas, gambling dens, and whorehouses to the south. It was a common enough arrangement in frontier towns, the kid knew. If there was no natural boundary to set the high-toned folks apart from their more rough-hewn fellow citizens, they would come up with an arbitrary one. The kid turned in the saddle and waved the wagon on. Annabelle came up alongside the kid, and he pointed out a large emporium to her.
Take the wagon over there. We'll stock up on supplies and then go down to the public well there at the end of the street and top off the water barrels.
All right, then what?
Well, we could push on toward the Jornada and make camp somewhere, but there's only a couple of hours of daylight left. By the time we pick up those supplies, it'll just be an hour or so. Doesn't seem hardly worth it.
Are you suggesting that we spend the night here in Las Cruces?
I reckon it would make the most sense. You could get a good night's sleep and a real bed for a change.
I don't know. What do you think, Father?
Mr. Morgan is right. We should make a fresh start in the morning.
All right. But I think we should guard the wagon overnight.
The kid pointed to a livery stable and wagon yard across the street.
The outfit will be fine over there.
You don't understand. If Fortunato has agents here, they could sabotage the wagon and hold us up long enough for him to catch us.
Tell you what, I'll stay with the wagon. You and the Padre can get rooms in one of the hotels and get a good night's sleep.
That hardly seems fair.
I can bed down just fine in the wagon, so if anybody tries to bother it, I'll get a mighty big surprise.
Well, it would feel nice to sleep in an actual bed again.
It's a deal, then. Come on, let's see about getting those supplies. That way we'll be ready to pull out first thing in the morning and won't have to wait.
Annabella tucked her long red hair up under her hat, but there was no disguising the curves of her body. The sight of a woman wearing men's clothing and packing a gun drew some curious looks from the people in the street as she drove the wagon over to the general store and parked it in front of the high front porch that served as a loading dock. The kid saw the stiff set of her face and knew she was doing her best to ignore the stares. Annabelle and Father Jardine climbed down from the seat.
I'm going to walk over to the church.
The priest nodded toward a large adobe building topped by a bell tower.
All right, but be careful. Don't tell anyone who you are.
I agreed not to wear my cassock in an attempt to conceal my identity, Doctor. But obviously that ruse failed. I see no need for further deception.
Just humor me, Father. All right?
Very well. It will be as you wish.
Father Jardine ambled off toward the church. The kid and Annabelle went into the store. The place was fairly busy. They had to wait to be helped by one of the aproned clerks behind the counter in the rear of the store. While they were standing around, the kid consulted with Annabelle about exactly what they would need, so they had a list worked out by the time it was their turn. The clerk used a stub of a pencil to scrawl their order on a piece of butcher paper, then set about gathering up the supplies. Feeling eyes on him, the kid glanced over and saw a couple of little boys standing in front of a glass-fronted candy case, stealing glances at him and whispering to each other. He smiled at them, and that emboldened one of the youngsters enough for him to come a couple of steps closer.
Mister, are you a gunfighter?
What makes you think so?
My pa says that men who carry a six-shooter like that are gunfighters.
Well, I wouldn't want to go against anything your pa told you. I'm not really a gunfighter, though. I just pretend to be one.
But ain't that dangerous?
Not if you pretend good enough.
The kid took a couple of pennies from his pocket and held them out on the palm of his hand.
You and your part have some licorice on me.
Gee! Thanks, mister!
Both boys snatched a coin from the kid's hand. They turned eagerly toward the candy counter, but the one who'd been talking glanced back and asked,
What's your name?
Morgan.
Thanks, Mr. Morgan!
A minute later, the youngsters scampered out of the store, trailing long strings of licorice they had bought with the pennies the kid had given them.
That was nice of you.
You sound surprised.
You put up a hard facade, Mr. Morgan. It's nice to know that there are at least a few tiny cracks in it.
A few minutes later, the clerk set a couple of wooden boxes on the counter.
Here you go, folks. These are the supplies you wanted.
Much obliged. How much do we owe you?
$3.06.
The kid reached for his pocket.
Wait a minute. I can pay for this.
No need. If I'm going to be traveling with you, I can pay my share of the freight.
The fact of the matter was, he could have bought and sold their whole outfit thousands of times over. He didn't have that much cash on him, of course. But there was plenty of money in bank accounts in Boston, Chicago, Denver, San Francisco, and Carson City. Of course, the name on those accounts wasn't Kid Morgan, but he could put his hands on the funds anytime he wanted them just by sending a few wires to the attorneys who handled his legal and business affairs. He handed a $5 gold piece to the clerk, collected his change, and then he and Annabelle each picked up a box.
The least you can do is let me help carry them out.
All right.
They took the boxes and turned toward the open double doors that led out onto the general store's porch. They stopped short as three men suddenly appeared in the doorway, blocking it.
Morgan! Kid Morgan!
Oh, hell.
The kid knew all too well what was coming next. Those varmints wanted to prove they were faster on the draw than he was. And there he stood, his hands full of flour, salt, sugar, and a side of bacon instead of a six-gun.
Mr. Morgan?
Move off to the side, Doctor.
The kid's eyes never left the three men as he spoke. He was at another disadvantage there because they had the light from outside behind them. The late afternoon sun wasn't as bright as it had been midday, but even so, the men in the doorway were little more than silhouettes to the kid. He kept his eyes on them anyway, watching for any telltale twitches or other involuntary movements before they slapped leather.
Is there going to be trouble of some sort? Should I try to find the local authorities?
You do that, Missy. You go find the local authorities.
How dare you mock me? I'll have you know that I'm a doctor.
Good. Your friend there's gonna need a sawbones when we get through with him.
Yeah, more likely the Undertaker.
Dr. Dare, Annabelle, get the hell out of the way.
Oh!
She edged her way to a corner of the shop.
I just came in here for supplies. I wasn't looking for trouble.
You found it anyway, mister. We've been hearing all over the territory about this gun thrower who calls himself Kid Morgan. That'd be you, right?
I'm Kid Morgan.
My name's Cohane. Man on my right is Jericho, and on my left is Mawson.
Can't say as I'm happy to make your acquaintance.
Reckon not, since we're the men who're gonna kill you.
At first, the kid had heard a lot of scurrying around behind him. He knew the clerks and the other customers were hunting cover. Now, an uneasy silence hung over the store. The kid didn't hear anyone moving around.
Doctor!
What is it, Mr. Morgan?
You see anyone else besides me and these three hombres in here?
No, everyone's hiding.
Good. Cohane, you and your parts just back on out of here and nobody has to die.
You got that wrong! You have to die, Morgan, if we're gonna be famous!
Famous for gunning down a man when the odds are 3-1 in your favor? A man who has his hands full and can't even reach for a gun?
People will forget the details. They'll just remember that we're the man who killed Kid Morgan. And you can drop that box anytime you want to. In fact, you better do it right now because you're about to die.
The kid didn't drop the box of supplies. He threw it at the three gunmen, sending it sailing through the air toward them. Instinct made them duck away from it. The kid went for his Colt. As the three bodies hit the floor, he glanced over at Annabelle.
You all right?
She looked up at him and nodded. The kid turned his head to look the other way, and saw the boy from earlier, who stood there with his eyes so wide it seemed like they were about to pop out of his head. Part of a licorice whip still dangled from his grubby hand.
How about you, son? You're not hurt, are you?
No, sir, Mr. Morgan.
Stay right there.
The kid strode forward to check on the three would-be gunfighters. It was easy to see that Mawson was dead. A huge pool of blood surrounded his head. The kid had put a bullet in Jericho's brain, so he knew Jericho wasn't a threat anymore. The kid saw the lifeless eyes staring upward and knew that Cohane was dead too. The kid broke open the Colt and started thumbing fresh rounds into it from the loops on his gun belt as he walked over to the little boy. When he had finished reloading, he slid the gun back into leather and knelt in front of the wide-eyed youngster.
Are you sure you're okay, amigo?
Yeah.
Good. What's your name?
Jamie, sir.
Okay, Jamie. You should really go home to your mom.
Okay.
The kid watched the youngster hurry out the store through the side door, since Colhane's body still blocked the front door. Folks were coming out of hiding in the store now. Annabelle had come up behind him and stood there with the box of supplies. The body didn't stop the man who appeared in the doorway and stepped over the corpse. He carried a shotgun and looked around the inside of the store with angry dark eyes.
What the hell's going on here?
The newcomer wore a gray suit and hat. A badge was pinned to the lapel of the coat. The kid lifted his hands so that the lawman could see that they were empty.
Take it easy, Sheriff. The shooting is all over.
I'll decide when things can be took easy and when they can't. What happened here?
The clerk, who had filled the order for the kid and Annabelle, spoke up from behind the counter.
It wasn't this fellow's fault, Sheriff Lipscomb. He and the lady were minding their own business when Cohane and those two cronies of his came in and started threatening them. Well, they were going to kill Mr. Morgan here.
Sheriff Lipscomb lowered the greener and came further into the store. He checked the bodies, then frowned at the kid.
You shot all three of them?
Seemed like the thing to do at the time.
And how many shots did they get off?
None. I was peeking around the end of the counter and saw the whole thing. Slickest thing ever, Sheriff. The way Mr. Morgan drew his gun and shot him.
Yeah, slick. Your name's Morgan, eh?
That's right.
Can't be Frank Morgan. He'd be a lot older than you, if he's even still alive.
He's still alive. You can count on that.
And you must be the one I've heard some talk about. Kid Morgan, or something like that.
You heard right.
Did you come in here to buy supplies?
That's right.
Well, here's what you do. You take your supplies and get the hell out of my town.
My friends and I were going to spend the night here.
Your friends are welcome in Las Cruces. You ain't. I want you gone before the sun sets.
He nodded toward the bodies.
You see, Culhane had more friends than just Mawson and Jericho. I don't want any more gunfights around here.
All right, I'll go.
And so will we. If you're not welcome, Mr. Morgan, then neither are we, regardless of what this gentleman says.
I don't mind if you stay here tonight. We can meet up again tomorrow.
Nonsense.
The kid was relieved. He didn't really like the idea of having Annabelle and Father Jardine that far out of his sight overnight. He didn't know if Fortunato was really as dangerous as Annabelle seemed to believe, but there was no point in taking unnecessary chances. It would be better if they all stuck together.
Fine. I reckon we'll push on, even if it is late.
He was confident that he could find an acceptable place to camp for the night. They would have to be more watchful than ever, though. If Culhane had friends who might be upset about his death, as Sheriff Lipscomb had implied, then those hombres might decide to come after the man who killed him and try to even the score. So there might be a few more people who wanted him dead. That number seemed to be growing all the time. Father Jardine was nowhere in sight. The kid nodded toward the mission at the other end of the street.
He's probably still down there visiting with the local priest. Why don't you go get him?
You could come with me.
I'm not sure the Padre would think that a killer like me was fit to set foot inside a church.
I thought everyone was supposed to be welcome in a church.
Maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. Doesn't mean that's always the way it is. Anyway, somebody ought to stay here and keep an eye on your outfit and the supplies.
Isn't it our outfit now, since you've joined forces with us, Mr. Morgan?
Not hardly. I'm just along for the ride.
Annabelle didn't say anything to that. She just gave the kid a look he couldn't read, then started down the street toward the church. He leaned against the wagon. Quite a few people were gathered around the general store, having been drawn by the sound of shots, and most of them were looking at him and trying not to stare. The kid felt their eyes on him. He knew what they were saying as they whispered among themselves. Sheriff Lipscomb stepped out onto the porch a moment later.
You haven't left yet?
It's only been a few minutes, Sheriff. The lady's going to fetch our other friend. He's down at the church.
As soon as they get back, I want you out of town.
We'll leave as soon as we've topped off our water barrels at the well. No law against us using the water, is there?
It's a public well. Undertaker ought to be here soon.
The kid nodded.
I imagine there's always a lot of work for the Undertaker wherever you go.
I get it, Sheriff. You don't want me around. I said we're leaving, but I won't be rushed.
Lipscomb shifted the shotgun that was now tucked under his arm.
As long as you get out, that's all I care about. This is a nice, peaceful town most of the time. I'd like to keep it that way.
The kid glanced along the street and straightened from his casual pose against the wagon when he spotted Father Jardine hurrying toward him. The priest was alone, though. The kid didn't see any sign of Dr. Annabelle Dare. As Father Jardine came closer, the kid saw that he wore a scared expression on his weathered face.
Father, what's wrong?
Men at the church! They have Dr. Dare!
What happened? Were they Fortunato's men?
Who's Fortunato?
From some of the things they said, I believe they're friends of men called Culhane and Mawson and Jericho. Men who, according to them, you killed a short time ago, Mr. Morgan.
The kid's hand instinctively started toward his gun. Father Jardine caught the movement.
That's what got Dr. Dare into the trouble she's in.
And it's what'll get her out of it, too. What do they want?
They said that you should come down there and face them. If you do, they won't harm Dr. Dare.
What did they do, sneak in the back of the church?
That's right. They had their guns drawn. They threatened me and Father Horatio and took Dr. Dare prisoner.
Did they hurt her?
Not that I could see, although they were handling her rather roughly.
The kid's jaw tightened in anger when he heard that. He took a step toward the church.
Hold it! Where do you think you're going, Morgan?
You heard the Padre. If I don't go down there, those hombres are liable to hurt Dr. Dare.
So you're gonna have another gunfight?
Lipscomb shook his head and lifted the scattergun.
I don't think so.
You have a better idea?
Damn right I do. I'm gonna go down there and put a stop to this. You stay right there. That's an order.
The kid wasn't in the habit of taking orders, especially from overbearing 10 stars. But maybe, just maybe, Lipscomb could put a stop to this incident without anybody else getting hurt. The kid sort of doubted that, but the man was the law there. The kid supposed he ought to give Lipscomb a chance. But Annabelle's life might be at stake, the kid reminded himself.
You better be careful, Sheriff. They got a prisoner down there, and there's no telling what they might do.
I can handle a bunch of cheap gunmen.
Lipscomb started toward the church, holding the shotgun slanted across his chest in front of him. He glanced around at the crowd.
Everybody clear the street! Now!
People hurried to obey the order. The kid and Father Jardine stayed where they were, beside the wagon.
I have a bad feeling about this.
You and me both, Padre. You and me both.
Sheriff Lipscomb stopped in front of the church.
You men in there, come out with your hands up. Let the woman go. Send Father Horatio out, too. All right, if that's the way you want it, by God, I'm coming in. You're all gonna be under arrest.
Oh, Lord, he's dumber than I thought he was.
The lawman strode toward the heavy double doors of the church. One of the doors opened before he got there, and a hand holding a revolver thrust out.
Hold it right there, Sheriff. We told that old priest to send Kid Morgan down here.
Jackson? Is that you, Lou Jackson? Who else is in there?
Never you mind about that. Just back away now, lawman, and you won't get hurt. Our fight's with that low-down bastard who killed Culhane and Mawson and Jericho.
There aren't gonna be any more gunfights. Morgan's down the street, and I've given him orders to stay right where he is and let me handle this. That's what I'm gonna do. Now release your prisoners and come on out, or you're gonna find yourself in more trouble than you've ever been in before.
Somehow I doubt that, Sheriff. You ain't gonna skedaddle, are you?
I told you, I'm not going anywhere until you release Father Horatio and the woman and come out with your hands up.
You always were an arrogant son of a bitch, Star Packer.
The kid saw Lipscomb lift the shotgun.
Why, you...
The bullet knocked Lipscomb back a couple of steps. He struggled to stay on his feet and lift the shotgun. The weapon slipped through his fingers, though, onto the ground at his feet. Lipscomb turned, pawed at his chest for a second, and then pitched forward on his face.
Morgan! You hear me, Morgan?
The kid stepped away from the wagon.
I hear
you. You saw what just happened, Morgan. I gunned down a lawman. That means we ain't got nothing to lose now. You know what we'll do to this red-headed gal if you don't come down here and face us man to man.
3 against 1. Again. Folks in this town sure have a funny idea what man to man means.
Father Jardine gripped the kid's arm.
What are you going to do, Mr. Morgan? If they killed the sheriff, they won't hesitate to hurt Dr. Dare.
I know.
He pulled loose from the priest.
That's why I'm going down there.
But they'll just shoot you too.
Not if I shoot them first. And that's where you come in, Padre.
A few minutes later, Father Jardine walked slowly toward the church. He had to detour around the body of Sheriff Lipscomb, which still lay face down in the street. No one had yet dared to venture out and retrieve it. Father Jardine came to a stop and looked at the door, which still stood open a few inches, even though the hand holding the gun had been withdrawn.
Hello? Hello in there? It's Father Jardine!
What do you want, Padre? You were supposed to send Morgan down here. We're gonna kill a girl.
I'm sorry, but Mr. Morgan is gone.
Gone? The hell you mean by that?
He got on his horse and rode away. He said he wasn't going to get himself killed over a woman he met only 2 days ago.
It was true that the kid had swung up onto the buckskin saddle and galloped out of Las Cruces, heading west toward the Rio Grande. The church didn't have any windows in the wall facing the street, only the double doors, but just in case the men inside had found some way to keep an eye on him, he wanted it to look like he was just lighting a shuck out of there. He had explained all that to Father Jardine before he rode out, along with what he wanted the priest to do. Someone inside the church pushed the door open even more. An ugly, beard-stubbled face glared out at Father Jardine over the barrel of a gun. The man stayed back far enough so that if anybody outside was trying to draw a bead on him, they wouldn't be able to, but Father Jardine could see him.
Morgan left? Ran out just like that?
I'm afraid that's right. So, you see, it won't do you any good to threaten Dr. Dare now. You can let her go, along with Father Horatio.
Let her go?
You see that dead lawman laying in the street, Padre? My pards and me gonna be on the run. The girl's going with us, just to make sure nobody hereabouts gets any ideas about putting together a posse to come after us.
No one will molest you. You'll be allowed to leave Las Cruces if you'll just release Dr. Dare and Father Horatio.
Who's gonna stop us if we take them with us? Who's gonna get in our way?
Father Jardine had no answer for that. But he had to keep the man talking anyway. The kid had circled wide around the settlement, then approached the church directly from the rear. There were no windows back there either, so he doubted that the three gunmen holed up in the church would see him coming. He was sort of counting on that, in fact. They had probably barred the back door after sneaking in that way. Now, the kid was on the roof. He hoped Father Jardine had the gift of gab and could keep those killers distracted. He hoped as well that the men wouldn't shoot the priest. Surely they weren't loco enough to gun down a man of God. The bell tower was at the front of the church. That was his destination. The kid crawled part of the way, then stood up and cat-footed toward it. The tower stuck up about 5 feet from the roof, then was open on all four sides, except for the wooden pillars that supported its red-tiled roof over it. When the kid reached the tower, he looked over the wall and saw the big heavy bell hanging from a crossbeam. A thick rope was connected to a metal ring on top of the bell and then ran through a pulley arrangement and dangled toward the ground so that the local priest or whoever he designated for the task could stand down there and ring the bell by pulling on the rope. There was a narrow ledge inside the tower. A man could stand on it and clean the bell. A ladder led down from the ledge. That was the kid's path into the church. He pulled himself up and over the wall, then dropped carefully onto the ledge. He didn't want to fall, and he didn't want to lose his balance and have to grab the rope or the bell to steady himself. That would cause the bell to ring, and the clamor would warn the gunman that somebody was up there. The kid climbed down the ladder toward the little room at the base of the tower. He paused as he heard the front door slam.
Damn it, Lou! What are we gonna do now? You said Morgan would come down here to save the girl!
I figured he would. I know you're such a gutless coward.
Why the hell did you have to go and shoot Lipscomb? If they catch us, they'll hang us for killing a lawman.
Like they weren't gonna hang you for killing that woman back in Texas? And you, Chuck, you killed two guards when you busted out of jail in Kansas. Let's face it, we've all had the hangman waiting for us for a long time, and he ain't got us yet. He won't this time either.
I still don't see why we had to try to even the score for Culhane and them other two to start with.
Because they would have done it for us.
You can believe that if you want to, Lou, but I ain't convinced of it.
It's too late to argue about that part of it now. What are we gonna do to get out of here?
Kill the girl and the priest, and we'll set the church on fire. That'll keep the townsfolk busy while we're making our getaway.
The church is adobe. It ain't gonna burn.
The insides of it will, especially if we throw some kerosene around. I saw a can of it they use for the lantern. It's over there in that little room under the bell tower. Go get it, Chuck.
The kid looked down. Sure enough, among several items being stored in the room below him was a large can of kerosene. He grimaced as he heard footsteps approaching the open door of the room.
Bring the girl over here.
Chuck stepped through the doorway underneath the kid. He didn't have time to climb the rest of the way down the ladder. All he could do was draw his gun and let go of the ladder, falling the rest of the way. The collision drove Chuck to the floor. The kid chopped down at his head with the heavy revolver. Then he rolled into the doorway.
Oh, crap! Kill him!
Lying on his belly, the kid triggered two shots and saw one of the men go stumbling backward as the slug hammered into him. The survivor stopped shooting and ducked away. Crouching, the man ran between two pews toward the other side of the sanctuary. The kid scrambled to his feet and looked around for Annabelle and Father Horatio. He spotted them lying on the floor near the altar. Their captors had tied and gagged them, but other than that, they appeared to be unharmed.
Morgan, you son of a bitch! Why wouldn't you face us like a man?
Because you didn't deserve it! Anybody who would threaten a woman and a priest is lower than a dog!
Yeah, well, I'll kill them both after I've blowed a hole in your mangy hide. What do you think about that?
The kid slid underneath the pews and started crawling toward the front of the church. Suddenly, the kid realized that Jackson might try to hurt Annabelle and the father to lure him out into the open. He rolled into the aisle and surged to his feet, just in time to see that Jackson had gotten that can of kerosene from the tower room and was splashing it on the floor around the altar, including the two prisoners.
Jackson!
Jackson whirled around and flung the half-empty can at him. The the kid duck to keep it from braining him. That gave Jackson the chance to yank his gun out and blaze away. The kid flung himself forward, diving to the floor. The kid scrambled to his feet and saw that Jackson had managed to light the kerosene. Blue and yellow flames raced across the floor. They had already reached Father Horatio, who writhed as the fire ignited his kerosene-soaked robe and engulfed it. The kid dashed toward Annabelle, catching only a glimpse of Jackson. He reached down to grab Annabelle and snatch her up just before the flames reached her. Wrapping his arms around her, he ran clear of the kerosene. Jackson was gone. The kid didn't know what had happened to the killer and didn't care. All that mattered at the moment was getting Annabelle out of the church. Her clothes were covered with kerosene, and it would take only a spark to set them ablaze. He burst out the front door of the church. Father Jardine was waiting there anxiously.
Dear God in heaven, is she?
She's all right.
The kid set the half-conscious Annabelle on her feet.
Hold her up.
He pulled the bowie knife from the sheath on his left hip and cut the cords that bound her feet together.
Now get her away from here. The church is on fire and she's soaked in kerosene. Get those clothes off of her.
But...
No time for modesty, Padre. Move!
With an arm around Annabelle's waist, Father Jardine helped her stumble down the street, away from the church. Smoke came from inside the building. The kid ran back in. There was nothing he could do for Father Horatio, who was now just a burned husk. The man he'd shot was dead, and so was Chuck, he saw when he checked on the man in the room at the base of the bell tower. That blow from the gun had crushed Chuck's skull. That left Jackson, and there was no sign of him. He must have decided that it made more sense to cut his losses and get away from there. The kid hurried back outside and found the street thronged with people.
Get a bucket brigade going and wet down these other buildings. Keep that fire from spreading.
Father Jardine came up to him.
Where's Father Horatio?
The kid just shook his head. Father Jardine covered his face with his hands for a moment.
Where's Annabelle?
I took her into the hotel. Some woman there said that they would take care of her. I came back to see about Father Horatio and to find out if there was anything I could do to help.
Just do what you do best, Father. Pray.
And just what is it that you do best, Mr. Morgan?
The kid glanced at the burning church.
Cause all hell to break loose from the looks of it.